The scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Back to the Tennis Connected Studios for September 11th, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here today to review the U.S. Open from Flushing Meadows, New York. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce Parsa. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm still marveling at the Nima Naderi Kevin Anderson final pick, Rafa, over Kevin Anderson. That was 2 weeks ago, people. Amazing. That's for you, Nima.
Thanks, buddy. It was 150-1 odds that it would be Nadal and Anderson. So it was pretty good, I must say. And I mean, obviously, you got your dark horse pick, won the women's, which was Sloane Stephens. So that's, you know, equally as impressive. So that was a good one. And
a good week for us, Nima. Yeah. Good 2 weeks, huh?
Yeah. Hopefully, people, you know, are listening. You're like, well, these guys must know something, eh? And we'll keep listening to them. So we'll keep it going. And yeah, it's been a good. Been a good year. I had Wawrinka winning U.S. last year. I had the Cilic better final. That was another one. And then, obviously, we had Rafa winning the French. I don't remember what we picked for the Australian, but I don't think we had Federer and Nadal. That would be my guess. We want to go back a little bit. But
I mean, it was just the whole, let's talk about that this year, right? I mean, Federer and Nadal. They are the dominant headlines of 2017 again, even though it was so, whatever, what is it, 10 years ago? It's still the present right now.
Still the present, and you know what? They swept the Grand Slam calendar with Fed winning Australia, Nadal winning French, Federer winning Wimbledon, Nadal winning the U.S. Open. And it's remarkable. Probably the last time we're going to see that, let's be honest. I mean, if it happened again next year, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I 100% doubt that you're going to see these guys win all four Grand Slams. But you never know. I mean, that's why we get out there and we lace them up and, you know, we analyze and we look at the draws. But I think next year you're going to see, you know, a couple new guys jump in there, and we can talk about that in a bit. Before we get to the men's final, let's break down the women's. We had Sloane Stephens beating fellow American and good friend Madison Keys easily, 6-3, 6-love. You know, Keys had that leg strap, but I'm not convinced that that was the tail of the tape there. I just think that, you know, Sloane, and it's my bad because I actually had predicted that, you know, Keys was going to win that in 1 and 3, but I didn't think that, you know, Stephens would be able to defuse her power so effortlessly, right? Like, she's a very good, tricky, she's kind of like, I would say, a little bit more of a powerful version of Radwanska, where she's got a little bit more firepower, she's got great wheels, she can hit those chipped forehands, good slice, then when she needs it, she can, you know, get in there and really smash a backhand or a forehand. She's got a pretty big forehand. Serve is pretty good, too. I mean, she's not hitting, you know, 116, 117, but she can get it up to maybe 110, 98 to 110 miles an hour. Good first serve percentage, and I mean, it was a rout after breaking for, what was it, maybe 3-2 4-3 in the first set. She didn't lose a game. And so in some ways I feel bad whenever stuff like this happens. I'm looking at the crowd and like, how much money did these people pay for these tickets, right? And you're watching an hour match and you've paid maybe $1,000 a ticket or 800. That's a lot of money, right? So in that way, again, I mean, it's for them to decide if it was worth it or not, but that's a tough one. But I'm sure that, you know, Sloane is not, you know, she's not complaining about that, winning $3.7 million, and let's see what happens. Obviously, her endorsement rate is going to go up a lot too from here on in, and, you know, she's got a maiden Grand Slam title. And so, Parsa, how did you look at this match? And going forward, do you see her as a multiple Grand Slam winner, or is this pretty much going to be it for the rest of her career? And then a little bit on Madison and what we, you know, think of her future.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just an All-American semifinal, All-American final, obviously, and Sloane Stephens winning is a tremendous result. I thought that the women's side of the draw was the better tournament of the 2017 U.S. Open. There's just a lot of three setters, a lot of contention. It was just, several people could have won it, and it was just sort of had this great aura and energy about it. And I thought Sloane epitomized that with that match against Venus Williams. And it was just an amazing third set. Even though the first two sets was so lopsided to either side, the third set was just amazing tennis to watch, and Stephens really countered really, really well, and Venus gave her everything she could handle, and Sloane Stephens was able to come through, and I think she literally was the best player in the tournament. She won the tournament. Can she do it again? I think as long as her mindset and her emotions are similar to what she is, she's physically gifted enough to win, I would say, three, four, five even. She's got that sort of talent level and that kind of speed in her as a weapon that should be really, Nima, in all surfaces should be okay for her. And so therefore she's gonna have a chance at every Grand Slam. So in the next couple of years, if she can stay where she is mentally, who knows what she can do? I wouldn't say that five would be out of the question, but I'm definitely not a single slam person. I think there's going to be a more Sloane Stephens sightings in the future.
And go ahead and some thoughts on Madison.
Madison Keys, a tremendous tournament. Everyone was sort of saying the same story this year. It was, where I've come from, what I've been through to get to this point. That's sort of the story you heard over and over again. And Madison Keys is no stranger to that. She's been through a lot of difficult times, and although young, she can hit the cover off the ball and can play energized tennis for any given time. She clearly needs a little bit of concentration work. Mentally, she still can get more consistent, I think. But the physical upside for her is very, very high. She's so athletic. She can actually defend. She can hit. So there's a lot she can do and grow as she gets more experienced on the tour. I think there's just going to be a ceiling that has yet to be seen with her. So look out for her in the future as well.
Parsa, I was just looking at the rankings. We have Muguruza, ascending to the number one ranking now, followed by Halep, Svitolina, Pliskova down to four actually now after this tournament. She was number one coming in. Venus Williams, number five. Got to give her a massive shout out. I mean, she made what, the finals of Australia, finals of Wimbledon, semis of US Open at the age of 37 with a very tough year for her on and off the court. And it's an amazing effort to see her still at number five in the world. Then we have Wozniacki, Konta, who's been very quiet lately, Kuznetsova, who's up and down, Sabalenka, and Ostapenko, the reigning French Open winner. And then just rounding out, we have Radwanska, Keys, Kvitova, Kerber, who's down to 14 in the world, Parsa.
Amazing.
Amazing. What a difference a year makes. And then Kiki, Mikhdanovic, Vandeweghe, Sloane is at 17. Who was, another thing, Parsa, I think a couple months ago she was what, 900 in the world? Now
Right.
she's 17. So, I mean, that's what it will. But she also made the semis of Toronto, semis of Cincy, won US Open. That's a heck of a good summer. So she
Oh,
did,
yeah.
yeah, so you deserve everything you got right there. And then we have Vesnina, who won Indian Wells, and then Garcia as our top 20. Serena Williams, subsequently, Parsa, if you remember her. She's 22 in the world right now. So I'm pretty
And
sure.
you're saying all these great players. I think the women's game is very healthy.
Yeah.
The top is very good. You're saying all this, and all I'm thinking, Nima, is, oh yeah, this has got the makeup of Serena Williams coming and just slaying each one of these players all the way back to the top of the world. I can see it now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because just winning one tournament this year was basically all of her points. I don't think she played after the US Open last year, but I'm not mistaken. And so she's 22 in the world. So it looks like, because the women's ends a little bit before the men's. I think they're done right before the end of October. So they get full November and December off. So she's going to probably enter U.S. Open, sorry, Australian Open as the 22nd, 23rd seed, if she plays, which it looks like she is from what I've heard. So that's going to be a really interesting thing, and I mean, what a comeback story that would be as a new mother, taking a year off, coming back and defending the Grand Slam that you just played last as your last event. That's going to be a tremendous story, for Serena, when she returns. And we're all looking forward to that as well. So, Parsa, moving now to the men's side, we had Rafa Nadal taking home his 16th Grand Slam victory, defeating Kevin Anderson 3-3 and 4, I believe, in the finals yesterday, about 1 hour and 47 minutes. So it was, sorry, 147 minutes, which is just shy of 2 hours. You guys can do the math on that one. And I mean, it was a very comprehensive. I don't think he faced a break point. He was coming in, he won 16 of 16 points at the net. His first serve was on fire. He was coming in on some good stuff, really exploiting, Anderson's power. We know that Rafa is really good at absorbing pace, and he was doing that fantastically from the baseline on both his forehand and backhand, hitting his cross-court backhand very well, which is probably one of his best shots of the event. And I mean, credit to Kevin Anderson. Perhaps we'll never have this opportunity again, let's be honest. I mean, the draw completely opened up and separated for him to get to this point. Didn't have to play, anybody in the top 20. Same with Nadal. I mean, Nadal won this tournament, Parsa. He didn't have to beat one top 20 player to win one of the biggest and toughest tournaments of the year. That's you're never gonna see that again. Like that's very. But that doesn't to me that doesn't make a difference because he doesn't choose his draw, and he just goes out there and plays who's ever in front of him, and he did that and he beat everybody. And now he's got two slams on the season, and the physicality that he brought to the table. I remember being at your place before the tournament started, and you were like, the tournament's playing kind of slow. Can Nadal win this again? And I was like, I think so, man. And that's exactly what happened. And the court surface helped him, the draw helped him, and he was fit. And when he's fit and healthy, I mean, this is a guy who's very tough to beat in a 5-set format because you got to play lights out. Like, a guy like Delpo can do, or Tsonga did, a few years back in 07 when he beat him at the Australian Open, just on fire for 3 sets, smashing everything, or Soderling, or, a guy with tremendous power who can keep it up. And Nadal's a bit off, and you're gonna win that match. And he was completely on, completely healthy, he's feeling good. And if you look back at it, those losses to Shapovalov and in Kyrgios in Montreal and Cincinnati, respectively, were good for him in a way because he got some matches in. He wasn't on top form, but he was fresh. And he had an easy draw and a slower court surface. So, I mean, there you go. Done and dusted, and another Grand Slam in his pocket. So it's all good for Rafa. And, what were some of the dynamics that you saw from him throughout this tournament? And then a little bit of Anderson before we move forward.
Yeah, Nadal has always been and well said, Nima, by the way. Nima has been Nima Rafa has been just in a form like no other. Meaning because the absence of the world-class guys in the drawing, there was Nadal, but Nadal, I'm sorry, Federer, but Federer's a bit old. Nadal was in a different class. Would you agree with that, Nima?
Of course,
He was
yeah.
like just in his own place. And I think that whenever he played somebody, the disparity was great. I was texting a friend during the final saying, Nadal's come out and standing, 20 feet behind the baseline on the return. And what he's doing is he's able to neutralize Anderson's big serve and the number of free points he could get and minimize that. At the same time, he can get him to come forward a little bit more where Anderson's not comfortable. And eventually that'll bug him enough that mentally he won't be doing the things that he normally does so well. He won't be doing them as well. And I thought it was just it's just that Nadal can do that because he's got such a skill set. Djokovic can do that. Murray can do that. Federer in his prime could do that. Now Federer has to kind of hit through you. These guys have this ability to manipulate each situation, which is what makes them the best players in the world. And it was really apparent with Nadal in this tournament. You know, each guy, he sort of had his own thing he needed to figure out, and once he figured it out, it's over. You know, and right after that Leonardo Mayer match, where he survived all those break points in the beginning, it took him a set and a half or so to get that break.
Yes.
I think everything just started to just flow really, really well. The first set against Del Potro, like he said after that match, he played well, and Del Potro just played better. So a great tournament by Nadal. You know, but not that it's because of less competition. It's just that it is different competition, and there isn't the Wawrinka who can hit him off the court, and you know, or a Del Potro that can hit a two-hander, or that was healthy for that matter. You know, so it's you know, I don't know. It's a really, really great result in that he showcased who he is, yeah, and who he is was better than everyone else, and therefore he won. You know.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it really comes down to Nadal, you know, taking like the focus. And he said something really interesting after Cincinnati, and he said, "Listen, you know what? I have to go into New York and prove that I'm number one," and he did that. Another really good quote I put up on Twitter, actually, after he won his semifinals against Del Potro, was last year, Parsa, if you remember, after he lost to Lucas Pouille in five sets. Remember, I was at that match, and then I left close to the end of the fifth because I wanted to grab the train, the Long Island train, back to you guys. And, you know, in his post-match presser after that, he said, "Listen, you know what? I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm going to go home, and I'm going to fight every day until I get back to where I should be so I can win these tournaments. I don't know if it's going to be a year or 2 years, but it's going to happen." And you know what? He completely lived up to that promise. And that's a testament to what hard work will do for you. And, you know, Sloane Stephens said the same thing. I mean, she was touted as a D2 player growing up. They said, "You're not going to be better than a D2 player," which is not bad. I know a bunch of guys who played D2. I mean, it's okay. It's not a big deal. But what I'm saying is, now she's the U.S. Open winner. You know what I'm saying? So this tournament to me was kind of like a microcosm of never give up. You know what I mean? You have Nadal, who's fighting back from injuries, winning. You got Anderson, again, coming back from injuries, 31, making his first Grand Slam final. You have Sloane Stephens coming back from injury, winning this tournament. Madison Keys earlier this year, wrist surgery. So, you know, the great thing about our sport is that because it's an individual sport, except for doubles, obviously, you have scenarios where you have these players, both men and women, that are coming back and fighting through so many different variables, whether it's, you know, personal, you know, things or injuries or court surfaces, climate changes, all of these different things, and they got to do it, and they come out, and when they get it done, it's very refreshing, and it's very nice to see. And I think, as a you know, with the landscape of everything that's happening in the world, it really gives a lot of hope to everything, because you see these guys doing it, these men and women, and it's tremendous to see, and it makes me very happy, to be honest. But and it's going to be, I think this really sets up a nice 2018 for both men and women, because you have some of the, you know, the old guard who have been playing well, like the Nadal and Federer, but then you have a guy like Zverev and Shapovalov, and, you know, some of the younger players that are coming up, Sloane Stephens and Keys, that are going to potentially do some damage next year. So really looking forward to that. We obviously still, you know, do have some tennis on tap this year, both on the men's and women's side for the next couple months, so we'll be covering that, no doubt. Just wanted to get into a little bit of the rankings part, so very interesting for me to state this to you. So, on the men's side, right now, as of today, we have Nadal as number one. He's leading Federer approximately by 2,000 points. Number three, now this is the Emirates ATP. So this is the 52-week ranking sliding, right? Then we have Murray, Zverev, Cilic, Djokovic at six, Team seven, Wawrinka eight, Dimitrov nine, Karina Busta is number 10 in the world as of today. Then you have Milos, Goffin, Batista Agut, Nishikori at 14, Kevin Anderson 15, Querrey, Isner, Tsonga at Berdych, and Kyrgios as your top 20 players. Okay, so keep that in mind. Now I'm going to switch to the year-to-date London standings, which is what it's going to form into at the end of the, you know, the World Tour Finals. Nadal at 1, Federer 2, those are the same. Zverev is as year to date, the number three ranked player in the world. We have Thiem at four, Wawrinka 5. We know he's out for the rest of the year, so you can scratch him out. Then you have Dimitrov, Cilic, Corino Busta, Djokovic at 9. We know he's out. Then you have Querrey, Anderson, Murray, who he's out as well, so he's at 12. Then you have Goffin, Burdick, Bautista Agut, Nishikori, Raonic, who will be coming back next month. He had just had wrist surgery. He was in New York a couple of days back. Then you have Isner at 18, Tsonga, Kyrgios at 20 on both rankings. So for the most part, we're almost in line with the year to date and last year's. What's interesting for me is that at the end of this year, you're probably going to have Wawrinka, Djokovic, and Murray not in the top 10. Which is amazing, wow, because these guys pretty much swept the Grand Slam calendar last year, right? What do we have? We had Djokovic winning Australia, winning the French, Murray winning Wimbledon, Wawrinka winning the US Open. You know, fast forward 1 year, and all three of those guys will not be in the top 10 at the end of this year. So you look at, you know, yeah, I mean, opportunity abound, right? You have guys like Corino Busta, you have guys like Querrey, you know, Anderson, likely will maybe make London this year. I mean, if you look at London right now, as of today, you have Nadal, Federer, Zverev, Thiem, Dimitrov, Cilic, Corino Busta, and Querrey. That will be your top eight if it started today. Because Djokovic is 9 and Wawrinka is 5, right? But both of those guys will not be there. What's interesting to me is that year-to-date, Murray is 12th, but he's still number 3 in the world. You know how many points he's going to have coming off? I mean, it's just going to be a landslide for him because he won 5 tournaments to close the year last year, right? So basically starting in China and then going all the way through like the Parises, the Shanghais, everything. I mean, he's World Tour Finals. It's going to be a disaster for him. I mean, he's going to probably end the year somewhere, maybe even in the 20s. I really don't know. Not in the 20s, but high teens for sure. So it's going to be an interesting year. Something about Federer, you know, let's end off on him. He talked after his loss that, you know, he really didn't feel that he was going to win this tournament. And it's good that he lost because Del Potro, you know, has a better chance of beating Nadal in the semis, which obviously didn't happen. But one thing that was amazing that I heard from Fed was that, you know what, the schedule stays the same, looking forward to the Laver Cup, which is, you know, their own EXO event that's going to, you know, garner a lot of press around the world. That's going to be cool, happening in about, I think, 11 days. It starts there in Prague. And then he said, I'm playing Shanghai. I can't wait to get there a week earlier, really train hard, and win that event. And to me, this is coming from a guy who's won 19 Grand Slams. And he's, you know, jacked and juiced to get to Shanghai early to win that tournament. He said, historically, I've played well in the indoor season, you know,
he wants to sweep it.
Yeah, and I could definitely, if he's healthy, he's the best player in the world, no question, in the fall season. Right now, I haven't even, you know, we're close to a month out from Shanghai starting, which will be our next podcast. I'm telling you right now, I'm taking Federer to win that tournament. Because he's just, and you know,
I agree. Yeah. I can't, like, you know, I think it's setting up that way. I mean, if it's going to continue to be what this draw was,
yes,
no one's going to touch that guy inside. I mean, Anderson will be tough.
Yes.
You know, and we didn't even mention him. He could be in the top 8 at the end of the year. Yes. I can see him having a great indoor season. You know, so, wow.
And it's going to be, and you know what, and Shanghai is the fastest Masters 1000 event as well, too. It's lightning fast. You know, that's very conducive towards Federer's play. I mean, obviously, the asterisk is definitely how his back is feeling. Because we know he wasn't 100% at the U.S. Open. If it wasn't a major, there is no way that he's playing that tournament. So he's going to have to really recover and regroup. And he said that he was tired after, you know, his quarterfinal defeat to Delpo. And I just think that it's going to be, you know, a tremendous, you know, fall season. And it's good because that you know, Nadal is not as good indoors and on faster hard courts. And I think that Federer with 0 points to defend, and I think Nadal pretty much does too, because I think he shut it down after he lost to Troitsky last year in Shanghai. He's got, you know, some points to defend, but not a lot. I think, you know, game on for number one, and that's to me going to be the story of the year to finish off. You're going to
It's
see it a
gonna
little bit on the
be
women's,
who's gonna be the number one at the end of the year is a big one because they're even right now.
basically even, and a lot of points up for grabs. And you're going to see the same thing on the women's side, because Muguruza is just hanging on to that top spot. We've seen that Mirogo round. I think, you know, Halep still has some chances. Pliskova, Svitolina. You're probably going to see one of those four, you know, pretty much take that. And it's going to be interesting. Parcel, one last guy we got to give a shout out to is Delpo. I mean, what an amazing character. And, you know, I said it at the US Open. I was sitting there with a bunch of the, you know, press from around the world. And, you know, that team match for me was the best match of the event. And you have situations like, you know, this guy has, for me, as much fan support without question that Nadal and Federer have. He's right there. I mean, his match against Federer, you'll never see. Remember a couple of years back when Federer played Djokovic in the finals of the US Open? I mean, nobody was there for Djokovic. And you have situations now where, you know, Djokovic, like Delpo, is getting more cheers than Federer is. And it's tremendous to see. And I think definitely that, you know, this is a guy we need to rebound. If we can get that backhand back to where it was, I mean, it's awesome. I would love to see Delpo play for 2 or 3, 4 more years at this level, and you know, just doing his thing. You have some words on Delpo and what he needs to do to keep that going, and you know, get back to top 10, top 5 position. While you're doing that, I just want to see what his ranking is. So you go ahead, let me know what you're thinking.
Yeah, I mean Delpo, what I think is crowd favorite, just a guy that's he is endearing, and you just want to go out there and you want to cheer for him, and he's trying hard, he always tries, and he's just a big time big match player. I think he's always going to be a tough out because and the way he plays is very endearing to the fans, and we all love watching him, and he provides quite a bit of drama and can take out any of these big guys at any time, even at a decimated level. And so I think a lot of people get behind him because he's always in that underdog role. And, you know, that's awesome. I think he can be around for a very long time because he manages his schedule very well. He doesn't overplay. He can't because of his wrists. So I think, and he's younger than his actual age. So he can be around for a while, Nima.
I really hope so. And you know, I'll never forget, you know, a quote Jim Courier said a few years back, and I think it was actually about Taylor Dent, if you remember that hard-serving American player. I think he worked with Jared Donaldson and stuff like that recently. But I think it was in Miami, and he was, you know, serving like 146, 147, and that was the time where like Agassi was, you know, returning a serve right on the baseline. And he said something like, "People always like to see something that they can't do, and nobody can hit a forehand like Delpo." You know what I'm saying? And he's just lining that thing up, planting that open, semi-open stance, and crushing that ball. And it's just, people are like, "Wow." You know, like that's just right there worth the price of admission. And I'll give the USTA credit, because that team, you know, a Delpo match on the grandstand was just something I've never seen before. I went back to the media center and then came back. I could hear, you know, the Delpo chants from there. And it was incredible. And you going into that match, the ushers, they didn't have any place for me to stand. And I'm in the media, and I had to stand in the corner, and that was 3 rows deep. You looked at the top of the stadium, you're going 6 rows deep. Not a seat to be had in the place. And if they had put that in ash, you would have lost that feel, because it would have kind of drowned it out. Even though the Federer and Delpo match was electric, you want to give people of every economic status, especially, you know, grounds pass people, that ability to be for that match. And that, to me, was in a tremendous, you know, effort by the USTA to put that there, because the ambiance, and I mean, it was just for Delpo to go down 2-1 in the first couple sets and then save some match points, roar back, feeling like he's gonna tap out, but the crowd is just, "Keep going, buddy, keep going." I mean, it was just an incredible thing too. And I will always remember that match. There's a few matches, in the U.S. Open that I've been to live. Probably, people will not remember, but that will be one for sure. There was one a few years back. I remember. I think it was 07 or 09. It was Augustin Colleri versus Hewitt back on the old Armstrong. And I mean, Colleri came out. He beat Hewitt in four sets. He was just zoning. And I remember Mal Washington, interviewed Colleri right after that, the Argentine. Beautiful one-hander, by the way. Said, if you play like this, you're going to win this tournament. Obviously went down in the next round to Juan Monaco in, I think, three or four sets. But that type of atmosphere, those type of matches, I remember going back even to 2003 where Nadal had beat Vicente on an outside court. And it was the first time I've seen him live. And I was telling my buddy at the time, I was like, this guy's going to be number one in the world. And that's when Nadal was coming up and they had like kind of, this was a little bit after New Balls Please, where Federer was coming up and stuff like that. And I remember going to the Nike Town and they had these pictures of like a young Nadal on the wall and nobody even knew who this guy was. And a couple of years later, he's winning the French and, then his legacy began after that. So a lot of these really cool things do happen at the US Open. And because, of the New York crowd and the vibe and the energy of that great city. And I mean, just looking forward to 2018 right now. I'll tell you that right now. And it was amazing. And, thanks for everybody out there for putting on that great event. And I think if that's it, Parsa, we're going to wrap it up for this week. If you have any closing words.
No, that's it. Just a great job, great US Open, and can't wait to see what's next.
100%. And I think that, with that said, Parsa and I will be back in about a month's time to preview the Shanghai Rolex Masters in China. Then we move from there to the Paris World Tour Finals as well as the WTA Finals. And then that will be it for the season. I want to give a big shout out to Grand Slam Tennis Tours for sponsoring this podcast. Make sure to hit them up for all your Australian Open packages. They got some other cool events too. They have a fantasy league going in Hawaii in November with some of their players from Top Notch Management. So make sure to check that out on their site too. Parsa, thank you so much for joining us and for all of your hard work during the fortnight in New York.
Thank you, man.
Thanks everybody out there for listening. Be good. Continue to follow us on all of our social media forums. Parsa at Parsa Samuel. Make sure to download this podcast on iTunes and subscribe so you never miss another further show. Thanks everybody out there for supporting us, and we'll hit you guys back up in about a month's time. Be good and enjoy. We'll be right back.